internet a nicer place is a tall order, but it's one that this week's guest is definitely up for. Sam Eberhardt is the founder of the Mayfair Group, and as someone who recognized the hypocrisy of perfection that's often peddled on social media, she wanted to change the narrative. When she started posting real and raw updates on her own life and mental health on social media and let go of the need to show up in a certain way, people began flocking to her page and her posts. Recognizing there was a hunger for content created around honest mental health conversations, Sam grew her social media presence and then decided it was time to launch an apparel brand with a mission. The Mayfair Group makes gear that's gone viral again and again. You might even recognize their colorful empathy sweatshirt. This clothing has been seen on everyone from J-Lo down to normies like you and me. The slogans on some of the apparel remind the wearer and those who see it of the importance of recognizing the person in the clothing. Some of my favorite shirts they make have slogans like, it costs $0 to be a nice person, and your emotions are valid. Messages that are definitely worth spreading. In this episode, Sam and I dig into a lot, including how much to share on social media and how to build up appropriate boundaries when it comes to what to share, how Mayfair was able to pivot so quickly into selling physical goods, the self-care practices that work for her, and what her depression symptoms look like, and the initiative that the Mayfair Group is launching to give more people access to mental health assistance. This is an episode that I also get very real and very candid in things that I've struggled with when it comes to my mental health, including some recent revelations and things that I've been dealing with. So it was really nice to show up in conversation, even as the host, with someone who was seeing me as I am and accepting me. Sam is a joy to talk to, and I know you'll love this interview. Enjoy. Okay, Sam, thank you so much for joining me today on We Gotta Talk. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. Big fan of the product and the message that you guys managed to weave into your gear, to your actual physical product. Tell me a little bit about why it's so important for the physical products that you manufacture to have that sort of spiritual or emotional component to them too.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, first off, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you for creating the space and allowing me to be a part of it. It's so incredible. And I love what you do. And I love the conversations you have. So I'm honored, truly honored. But yeah, Mayfair started really as a kind of a creative outlet for something that I was navigating personally. So I went through a lot of mental health issues from college all the way up until like my late 20s, a lot of depression and anxiety. And I would get online and I just realized there wasn't this digital safe space. It was like, you know, 2016, 2015 was very the like hyper alter reality era of Instagram. It was like peak aesthetics and like show your best life. And, you know, it was just kind of what
it was
I saw.
The worst.
Like, it was the, like, literally for lack of a better word. Are we allowed to cuss on this podcast?
Yes, please
okay.
do.
Okay. It was the fucking worst. So yeah. It just was like, for me, it was the most isolating and loneliest place to be. And so I really wanted to create an online digital community. So that's really where the company kind of started was, why is there not the safe space online? People are talking about mental health. People are talking about that, the things that I felt like mattered and truly making people feel less alone. I was like, how do we need to use the internet for good? Like, what are we doing? You know, if this is the kind of messages and narrative that we're portraying every day when we're on social media. So I set out to create this digital safe space, and that's really how it started. So, you know, from the very beginning, creating safe spaces online and creating positive messaging was really like incorporated into the DNA because that's what I was searching for. And I guess I just didn't realize that so many other people also wanted that digital safe space. So we started in 2017 and it was just like me in my guest bedroom, you know, putting out positive messaging, and I was doing services for brands on the side. And then we just started to kind of gain momentum. And honestly, I feel like it's a big testament to the people I hired, my COO and co-owner, Devin. Her background was in product development. And we had, you know, she kind of came on board and I was like, everyone's asking us for sweatshirts. Like, I don't even know, what do we do? Like, I never really ran an e-com company before. And so we just listened to the community and we started creating products. And we were like, this is the second iteration of creating this ripple effect with positive messaging. People in the world might see a mental health sweatshirt when mm-hmm. they're in line for Starbucks, and all of a sudden, you know, their day changes because they feel less alone, or it strikes a conversation. And it's just been so incredible. I think that, like, you know, we've had these really cool experiences, and I feel like people every single day are sending us messages about moments they have wearing our mm-hmm. products. And I've experienced it firsthand. I was at an airport one time and this mom came up to me. I was wearing my Mayfair mental health sweatshirt, and she's like, "I've never been able to talk to anyone about my daughter's depression, and your sweatshirt made me feel really safe. And can we, you know, have you struggled with this?" And I sat with her at a gate for 45 minutes and we cried, and it was like, I got to experience firsthand the impacts of how products can create safe spaces. And so that's really like what we're trying to do, is create more of those spaces in real life, online, you know, talk about the things that we feel like are, you know, part of the human journey that help people mm-hmm. feel less alone.
Yeah. I recently had an experience where I was diagnosed like a little later in life, like within the past year or so, with OCD. And I haven't really talked about it much. It makes me really emotional, but hearing that experience with the mother and her daughter makes me realize how important it is to be open and vulnerable. And I, you know, I haven't talked much about it. It's like, whatever. I mean, I feel every time I say it, I feel the need to say, but it's mild. But I mean, I've always known there was something different. And seeing things from the perspective of a mother and understanding the feeling of being responsible for another person's, another soul's journey is such pressure. Yeah. And the last thing I would want would be for any of my children to be judged on something beyond their control. So it does give me, like that mother, I guess, with you, that space to own it and to be able to talk about it. It's such a beautiful thing, really. I love that it came in that form, because we carry a lot as women, especially as mothers sometimes. So I'm sure you helped her to feel seen, and her daughter to feel, you know, through her, a little more understood. That's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing. I feel like it takes bravery and courage to be able to really own our experience and the things that we navigate. You know, they're always a part of us, but they never define us. I always talk, when I talk about mental health, it's like, even though these things, your OCD, my depression, like, these are just part of our experience, but they never are definitive of who we are. And I think that when you're younger, you know, it's so hard because you're like grasping to anything as an identity coping mechanism. And I think that's what that mom was talking to me about, was like, her daughter felt really defined by her depression. And I was like, I have been there. Like, I've been in the phase where depression was all I felt like I was. And anyways, we sat and like, I gave her my number and I was like, if your daughter needs to call me. And it was just the purest, sweetest moment. But we get messages like that all the time of people being like, you know, I was in chemo and I was wearing this sweatshirt and like, I made other cancer patients feel less. I mean, it's just the most beautiful stories that when people ask me what's been the most like rewarding part of running this brand, and any of my team, like, we're like, those are the moments that we feel like what we're doing is creating a difference. You know, all the other cool moments are cool, but like that, those moments, when those isolated moments, when you really get to experience the impact of someone feeling really seen and less alone in their struggle, to me is like what makes it all worth it. So
I wonder if you ever had a moment where you looked to, I know this is difficult, but the bright side of your depression diagnosis. I often joke that what I just thought was just a different brain, it turns out there's like a name for it, but it's also my superpower, right? It drives me in a way that I don't think I otherwise would be driven. So is there for lack of a better word, I know this is hard to say about a very serious diagnosis, but what's your upside?
I love that question. Wow. I've never been asked that. I think my ability to feel things so deeply, like I navigate depression, and you know, now I feel a lot more equipped to navigate depression because of all the work I've done, but I'm also a Scorpio. I'm like a water sign through and through. So like during those dark phases, it is dark. Like we are ocean bottom, you know, like, but I also feel like I have this innate ability to feel things so deeply, and it's such a superpower because I see my ability to navigate those emotions high and low as like, I'm just someone that's been gifted with these things, like being able to experience these emotions at such a level that, you know, some other people may not ever be able to experience, and other people will, and I can relate to them in that way. But it's like my superpower. I feel like I have a really, you know, I have this a way of being able to communicate about emotions. I'm able to take on darkness. I'm not really afraid of it anymore. And my therapist always says, like, the lesson I'm learning now is just because I'm comfortable in darkness doesn't mean I have to take on everyone's darkness, because I'm the type of person, I just will open myself up for, oh, this is what you're going through here. Let me show up for you. Let me take it on with you. Let me tell you how to get through it. You know, but there's also this component of like, your energy is sacred. And so now I'm learning the lesson of like, now that I'm comfortable in my darkness and everything that, you know, I used to run away from, I faced, now it's like, how do you also protect yourself of not taking on everyone else's darkness? Because when you're so comfortable in that space now, it's like, I want to help, you know? Right. So that's my lesson right now.
How does that look practically for you then? Is this like a way of sort of physically separating yourself from people, or how is it looking for you at least right now?
Boundary setting, energy protecting. I used to like give myself to everyone to the point where I was so depleted, and it became this cyclical cycle where it was like, you know, it was like, I was full up and then I would like give. And then it's like burnout. And like, when I burn out, it's like, you know, rock bottom, can't get out of bed, like can't do anything. So I think I've just really learned that, like, to walk the line between being able to give, but also preserve, and knowing, you know, that I can open myself up to other people and share their weight and be there for them and hold space for them, but also protect my own energy and boundaries. So I think it's that boundary. It's that protecting your space, protecting your energy, knowing when you're in a place where you're fragile or you're volatile, and all you need to do is be with yourself and fill your own cup up. And, you know, even if friends are like, I need you, you can say, listen, like, this is what I'm going through right now, and I love you, and I'm going to show up for you as soon as I can. But right now I need to show up for me. And being able to like prioritize yourself over every single person that you love and care about, and being that person that's like your own advocate.
Yeah, that's awesome. I do feel when I wear your shirt, this was months before having been connected with your team. It's like the off-white one with the red panel on the front and on the back. It said like, greetings from my feelings. It's like the beach scene. And I get so many compliments on it, by the way, but it is like a weird way sometimes I think of like addressing to the world, like, and I'm sure you have this experience too. Like, I know I'm a lot sometimes. I know, but I'm okay. I'm like living here in my feeling. Like I'm good. We're good. Mm-hmm. We're accepting where we are and who we are on this journey. So I love it.
Yeah. No, it's so fun. Like we try to, I always say, like, you know, the most important thing with, I call it mental wellness. It's not just mental health. It's like, how do you, you know, create these routines for your brain that, you know, enhance your mental wellness. It's not just like you get to the point where it's like a mental health issue. It's like, no, we should be working on these things proactively. And I always say with mental wellness, it's like you have to meet people where they're at. Like, you can't just like hit them with science and like facts. You know, it's like younger generations are just going to tune out. So with Mayfair, we're always trying to make our content really digestible. Mm-hmm. And same with our products. It's like, if you're going to own that you cry a lot and you're emotional, like, let's make it look cute on a sweatshirt so that people can walk around and be like, yeah, I cry a lot. Like, I'm proud, you know, of my emotions and the things I navigate.
You gotta own it, but you gotta
meet people where they're at. And I think that's the biggest thing, is like, in the space thus far, it's been a lot of, you know, science, and it's been a lot of facts, and you're trying to present that to a generation that, you know, is so used to content and things like that. So I think we try to like merge those worlds of like educating people, but also meeting them where they're at and not feeling like we're just preaching to them, but we're like helping them, you know, and helping them kind of progress and learn and be able to own their own journey. So
That was going to be a follow-up question. Actually, I'm glad you started down that direction, which is, what makes Mayfair Group different from other groups that address mental health? I mean, I think obviously your design aesthetic is unique, and the way you present your messages through the merchandise, through the physical product, is unique, but that's just from a consumer perspective. What about it philosophically is different, do you think, than any other, whether it be a mental health awareness campaign or health campaign that's already out there? What sets you guys apart?
Yeah, I definitely think that the fact that we've really trying to meet people where they're at is number one. I think something that I experienced when I was navigating a lot of my mental health stuff is like, like therapy is like overwhelming, you know, like it's like a lot of times when you're in the early stages of not accepting something you're navigating. Mm-hmm. And that was 9 years for me. Like it took me a long time to even say the word depression. So it's like, that's the level of like, people are battling with these things and they're, it's like, oh no, it can't be that. Like, I do not want it to be depression. I'm going to think and try to, you know, think like it's anything else, but that's scary, you know? And so I think that like, one, we have to normalize conversations, but like normalizing conversations, like, yes, the facts and like the direct advocacy and all that is important. But like, what for me is like meeting people where they're at, because I just know it was so hard for me to even come to terms with it, let alone learn about it, let alone go to therapy for it. It's like, these are all obstacles for people. So I think with Mayfair, it's like, you know, we really, you know, and we say we're more of a digital safe space. We're really about putting out purposeful campaigns, positive messaging through like URL, IRL initiatives that help people around us feel less alone and shine light on the human experience. So it's not like, you know, we definitely advocate in the space of mental wellness, as I say, but it's really about helping people feel less alone. But I think that one is you have to meet people where they're at.
Right. And two, can I just hop in quickly though? And could you describe to people listening what your depression looked like symptomatically? And I'm not asking anyone who's listening to like diagnose yourself, but I do think it'd be helpful because people hear the word depression and they're like, what does that even mean? Like, how did that look for you?
Yeah. For me, it was, you know, I think I would feel these periods of feeling like really, really low and I would isolate myself. And I think for the longest time, I suppressed a lot of things that I went through and navigated, and even depression was something that I really suppressed and ran away from. And I'm sure we can all relate to this. We spend so much of our life like clinging to these identities. So for me, it was like in high school, I was this person, in college, I was this person. In my 20s, I was, you know, I was being social in LA and going out and being a part of the fashion industry. And that became my like identity. And I think that a lot of it was I was running from what I was really feeling, and I was really putting energy into anything that would make me feel like I wasn't myself, because the thoughts in my head, the things I was feeling, you know, like the isolation, the loneliness, the like really, really deep lows, you know, even to the point of like, and I, you know, trigger warning, but like my late 20s was like ideation, like it got really, really dark. And so I was clinging to everything. So depression for me looked like I was running from everything I was facing. And I was the most social person in the world. I was, you know, drinking all the time. I was partying all the time. So like, I was clinging to who I was in college. And I was like really wrapped up in that scene. And it wasn't until the universe kind of like stripped everything away from me in my late 20s and really made me like face it head on. And, you know, that was when I was like, you know, I got to the point where it was just like everything came crashing down. I had changed like jobs at the time. I'd moved cities. So I was like away from friends, family. I had left my job. So it was like all these identity mechanisms got like taken from me in a life transition all at once. And it was like this huge crossroads. And I just remember I couldn't get out of bed for days. Like it was, I would struggle to sleep at night. I would stay up till 4 or 5 in the morning with like really bad insomnia and like panic. And I just was like, I need help. Like, I can't run from this anymore. Like these feelings, like, is this normal? And, you know, then it's like you go into the therapy world and it's like finding a therapist is such a hard process. Like I didn't feel understood by the therapist that I was navigating or trying to see. So needless to say, depression can look like a million different things. And that was specifically my journey. But I ended up just like really, really facing it and coming to terms with it. And I think like with any mental health illness that you navigate, you know, the biggest thing I've learned is like, this will always be something maybe you navigate, but it's not definitive of who you are. And I think in 2016, 2017, when I really faced my depression, it consumed me. It was like, that was all I was. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't think about anything else. I was like, this is who I am. This is going to be my life. Like, am I ever going to like laugh again? Like what? And so I let it consume me. And I think the biggest breakthrough that I had in therapy, I remember like a therapist saying to me, like, you may navigate these things, but this is never going to define you. This is going to be like the smallest little part of your journey, but you have to choose to see it that way. If you let it consume you, then it's your whole life. And so it was like this crossroads of like, do I choose this route, which is letting it consume me and it's going to be a dangerous, slippery slope? Or do I choose to try to like get help, try to like, you know, see it as something I navigate, know that I'm bigger than this, and like really try to like pick up the pieces. And so I, you know, I decided to get help, and yeah, my life has like been completely different ever since.
Has social media evolved in a way that makes you more comfortable to interact with it? I know you're stronger too, having been bolstered by therapy and by years of sort of educating yourself about what works for you. Like you said, boundary setting and, you know, all these things that, that make us grow. But has social media evolved in any positive ways, in your opinion, that can potentially support people's mental health?
Yeah, definitely. I you know, it's, social media is something like we all have an individual relationship with. I'm going to sneeze one sec.
Woo, bless you.
Social media is something that we all have an individual relationship with, and so much of it is under our control. You know, it's like, I always talk about, it's like, what do you want to consume and how do you create, you know, social media is like essentially like a part of your diet. If you think about the media that you consume as part of like what you're putting in your body, you know, it's like, it becomes really important the type of people that you follow. And I think that I'm really intentional about how I use social media. And I used to not be. I used to be on it all the time, just like doom scrolling, constant, like just, it was an escapism from, I'm anxious, grab my phone, look at my phone. Okay, I'm distracted. Okay, go back to that. You know, it used to be like I had that relationship with it. But I've really worked to change my relationship with social media. And it's so important to be intentional about the people you follow, the things you're consuming. I think that like, if you are intentional about social media, then social media and you can have a really great relationship. And, you know, I do think that the internet has come a long way. I think that like, I feel really inspired by the way that people like you are sharing your stories and speaking about the things that matter. And there's so many younger people in general, but I feel like Gen Zers and even younger generations that are really owning what they're navigating. And I think that gives me hope, because I think that like for younger me that never saw that on the internet, the only thing that made me feel better when I was in that like really dark phase was when someone was like, oh, that feeling like I've had insomnia, mm-hmm. like you are not alone in that. Like I've stayed up till 4 or 5 in the morning. And I'm like, all of a sudden I went from like being the most isolated person in the world to like, okay, I'm not alone. Like there's another person. This is not, you know, crazy. This is not. And so I think that the more that we normalize the conversation, you know, the more that it becomes something that people feel comfortable navigating and facing. But I do think that there's also a really big line with social. And I think we really have to be intentional about the way that we use it. But I do think it's come a long way. And it gives me hope that a lot more people are speaking about the things that they're navigating. And I think that that's, you know, that's amazing. That's like what we need, is to really, really be progressing and normalizing and making it something that it's like, you know, how are you doing? And then you hold mm-hmm. space for how someone is actually doing.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. I've interviewed, this is reminding me of a conversation I had with a woman named Larissa May. She founded this group called Half the Story. And it's kind of based on the principle that you just said, which social media only tells half the story. And it's social media. Like it kind of guides people on how to safely incorporate, mm-hmm. you know, interacting with social media into their lives. And they have curriculum that are sort of directed at kids. And, you know, being in the media space for so long, when I'm doing interviews, I often get questions about like media consumption and boundaries. And I always say, and your answer reminded me of this, is that social media is going nowhere, unfortunately, and fortunately, right? It has mm-hmm. some bright spots, but we have to learn how to interact with it in a way that serves us, and to set our boundaries and to remind our children that what you see is only half the story. They probably don't look like that in real life, you know, and they probably don't, their beautiful house is probably clean in this corner for this picture, but there's a mess somewhere else. These people are human. And I similarly sort of hated the social media worlds of like 2014 through 2017, when every powerful or influential influencer was strictly in the aspirational space. It just made me want to gag every time I logged on. I'm like, This is not fun to look at. You know, I was also in the throes of early motherhood. So that's,
yeah.
But yeah, it's changed for the better, I think, in some ways.
Yeah. First of all, I love Lars so much. She's a friend. She's amazing.
Good. Oh my gosh.
Lars is so amazing. Yeah, everybody should check her out. She's incredible. And I know you have probably an amazing podcast with her that I'm going to listen to now. But yeah, I think that like part of it is, you know, what's cool about social media, and again, using it for intentionally, is like, I always feel like we need more vulnerable people on the internet. Like I feel like you don't have to be, at least when I started like venturing into this space, it was like, oh, I'm not like educated enough to speak on it. I'm not, you know, and I think the coolest thing about the internet is like, you can own your own story and be vulnerable, and the internet needs more people like that. And you don't have to be like insanely educated on something to just own your human experience and be like, this is what I'm going through. I think the other part of that is like, we really have to change the way that we show up for people on the internet, because I feel like a lot of like what I'm seeing now is people are owning their stories. And then it's like, you know, people are like, the way that people respond in those spaces is making people feel like bad about it, challenging whether it's legitimate. And I think that like, that's where social media is also really dangerous, is the way that we show up for other people that are being vulnerable on the internet. And I think that like, you know, I don't know, there's so much going on in the internet right now. And I just really hope that when people are creating those spaces, that we also create intention to show up for them in the way that's supportive, you know, versus I feel like there's a lot right now of people just not being kind in those spaces. And I think that that can really make someone backtrack fast. So
yeah, you're right. And you know, here we are showing up and sharing something that's vulnerable in a way. This is why I'm so protective of things. Also, just my background in general made me really wary of people. Working in news really does a number on your brain. But yeah. I do turn this around in my head quite a bit, because you know, our vulnerabilities can be weaponized.
Yeah.
For worse. No, I was gonna say for better, for worse. And you know, while you may be doing good and connecting people with maybe a resource, or doing exactly what you said, which is make them feel a little less alone, you're also opening up yourself to some barbs. And I'm 42 and I'm still negotiating that. Like, what do I share? And I also, I'm woo-woo like this. I also do believe that energetically there are things worth protecting.
Yes.
And the more that I talk about, you know, maybe my relationships or personal things on my podcast or on social media, the more it like degrades them a little bit, you know. And I know that that's like overthinking it, and I probably should like open up. And I'm a little like, all of my spiritual advisors I worked with, I'm like, yeah, there's a block. I'm like, yeah, there's a block, because I'm like, there's crazy people. But I do think it's just all that to say, there is a constant negotiation between the need to show up in vulnerability and the need to protect oneself, one's family. And it's just it's a dance. I don't think there's ever one right answer for sure.
It is 100%. And I'm like you too. Like, it's funny, like the older I get, I'm very much like, ooh, I want to keep this to myself, you know? And I'm walking that line of like, you know, people are like, oh, but that'd be so encouraging to share. And then it's like, I don't know, but I think that you learn to listen to your intuition in those moments. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's been a couple scenarios in the past where like Mental Health Month last year was a perfect example. And I'm reminded of this moment because this was like one of the most impactful moments that I personally had with social media. And it was like, it was so like off the cuff and raw. And just like, I was basically going through Mental Health Month, and I thought that, you know, I was going to be speaking and I had all these engagements, and like, I would, you know, Mental Health Month is like the one time of year, unfortunately, besides World Mental Health Day, where like everyone on the internet is speaking about mental health. So a lot of us that work in that space, like, we have to, you know, make our rounds and speak on things, and absolutely love it, but it is exhausting. And I basically had like a horrible depressive episode, and I like couldn't get out of bed. I had to like cancel everything. And it was like, I was physically having to do all of the healing things that I was supposed to be speaking on. Like, I was supposed to be the expert and I was the student again. And it was just this like, you know, I think that's the hardest part sometimes about mental health and illness, is like, you think you're at phase 10 and then you're back at phase one. And it's like, so in like a whim, I have a really amazing friend that's this mental health advocate. And she was like, why don't you just post about this? Like, I feel like you saying that this is what you're going through will, you know, help so many other people. And so I just put up this post and like was really vulnerable. And it was like, you know, photo of me in bed, like crying. And it was just like my thought process of like, here I was supposed to be speaking, and all of a sudden I'm not back down to like learning all of the things and healing from all the things that I'm supposed to be speaking on. And like, this is what's so hard about like this and what I navigate. And it was just like the amount of people that responded to that versus like, you know, like polished interviews that I've done or like the things I would have been speaking on. And so that was a really big reminder for me for like in those moments, those are really powerful moments. But like you said, there's some things that you protect and then there's some things that your intuition is just like, just do it. Like you, this is the moment that will make someone else and, you know, a million other people feel so much less alone. And, you know, that's where like you're guided by your intuition and gut on what to put out. But it was just a really big reminder for me because it was like, it never has to be polished. It can just be like, this is what I'm navigating. And just in those like really raw, like even text on a slide, like this is what I'm going through. It's funny how connectivity is built through those moments.
And those moments are very valuable and, you know, sort of emotionally, and even I hate to be crude, but like business speaking, right? It's a moment of vulnerability to sort of expand your impact. And I think that's wonderful. Yeah. It's just, it's wild. I do. I've noticed too, that there are two types of people on the internet. There's like the people who process it first and then post. I tend to be that. And then the people who are bringing you in on the journey and like you're healing with them and you're going and, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting to me. I just, it is cool. And everybody gets to choose how they do it, you know?
It's so true.
So I wanted to speak to the business side of Mayfair Group a little bit too. And correct me if I'm wrong, but based on what I'm hearing and what I know of the company is that you guys seem to have launched pretty quickly into physical product from philosophy, right? It was like the impact was made through the actual goods, right? How did that decision look? I know a lot of brands that are in existence for years and they're doing the impact work, they're like building the following. And then maybe 5 years down the line, they do their merch or they release their product. How did it occur to you? And what was the decision-making behind being intentional about releasing the actual physical goods in tandem with the messaging?
Yeah, such a good question. So like I said, I hired my COO, who's now a co-owner. Her name's Devin. And she, her whole background was product development. She worked for H&M Group, Forever 21, like all of the big corporate businesses. And we had started getting a lot of requests for product. It was like the community, because we were putting out graphics and like we were doing positive messaging in like a digestible way where people would repost it. It was like we had cultivated this big community and everyone was asking for products. They were like, please print this on a sweatshirt. Please print this on a t-shirt. And so, you know, at first we were just kind of like, you know, like at the time we were still in the service industry. We were working with other brands, consulting for other brands and doing kind of the Mayfair digital community on the side as just like part of the business, but it wasn't really like funding anything. And so we started to just get more and more requests. And then we kind of started to realize like we can create a bigger impact with products. You know, we can kind of start like an advocacy arm of Mayfair down the line. Like we thought about like where we wanted to go long-term and we're like, okay, what's the catalyst to get us there? Like we're going to have to grow. And so we started to really listen to the community. And at first it was just like super selective. Like, you know, we'd ask like, which graphics do you want us to print on a sweatshirt? We'd make like 20 or 10, you know? And then it just started to grow where it was like everybody, you know, our empathy sweatshirt being one of the ones that's like the most known sweatshirts. That one was just insane. Like we started printing that sweatshirt and we was very limited edition. And at the time I'd hired my now brand director, Lauren Lestamo, and she came from an amazing PR agency. And so I think within her first couple weeks, she had like gifted it to some big stylists and it was like J-Lo wore it, Bella Hadid. It was like just nuts. Like, so it just kind of took off and it was like, we were preparing for it, but I don't think we ever thought it would take off in the way that it did. And then it was like during COVID. So everyone was wearing sweatpants and ordering at home. So it just was like this almost, I say like the universe had our back. Like it was this perfect crossroads of everything that could have happened that was on our side happening. And the timing was just so serendipitous. But yeah, it just took off overnight. And then it was like the business changed instantly. And then we were like an e-commerce lifestyle brand, like overnight, just based on the demand. So we started to figure out manufacturing, customer service. This was all stuff we had never done. So overnight, we had to figure it all out. And we started to build our team. And, you know, then we've just continued to grow. And now it's like what, you know, a lifestyle brand, which is so, so incredible. But yeah, it started with just like 10 sweatshirts that we were printing based on comments and people asking for them.
That's crazy. Do you have a favorite piece currently? I know the empathy one is kind of like your viral moment, but, and I know the line is always changing and expanding, but what has been special to you?
Ooh. I love this sweatshirt I'm wearing. This was a Kin collaboration we did with Kin Euphorics and Bella and Jen from Kin. And this one was so cool because it says be someone's angel today. And then it has two angels because we wanted to play off like the angel devil, but we wanted two angels. So we have a Kin and a Mayfair angel. And I think the way that I really like to think about product is creating value outside of just the, you know, product itself. And so Bella actually had the idea to create an affirmation hotline, and we called it Your Angels on Speed Dial. So me and her worked on pulling affirmations from our journals. And if you call the number is also on the sleeve right here. If you call the number, then you get a voicemail with Bella Hadid saying affirmations, and you press a certain number for each affirmation, but they came straight from our journals. So
that's brilliant.
Yeah, this is like my, you know, this type of product is like my favorite thing to design because I'm always trying to think of, and our team is always trying to think of how do we give value beyond just product? How do we make people smile, like make them feel that positive messaging in their day-to-day life? So yeah, our little affirmation hotline. So this one's special to me.
That's cool. Yeah. It's interactive. I mean, that would never occur to me. Gosh, it's testament too, to like how valuable from the entrepreneurial perspective it is to bring on the right people at the right time because I think like, it sounds like you've got a great team that just, you guys kind of fill in where like the, you know, where the other needs it. I think that's like very rare in that space.
I am so like, it's probably the thing I feel so much gratitude for is the team that I have at Mayfair, and Devin and I, like, we always say like, we cultivate such a great, like we manifest the people that we want, and then, you know, the space gets cultivated and they just bring so much, and we really like rely on them and learn from them. Like I'm really big on empowering people to kind of just like own their spaces, bring their ideas to the table. And that's kind of like what we've always wanted to build with Mayfair, because my past and Devin's past is kind of corporate. And a lot of our like senior directors worked at corporate companies, which is amazing, but you're like a really small part in a big machine. So it's like, you don't get to see the impact. Whereas at Mayfair, I think a lot of my senior team like feels really empowered that they get to like have these ideas and then watch them come to life and be a part of them coming to life. So, you know, small business life is hard, but I also feel like you really get to see the things that you create make an impact. And that is so rewarding for all of us. So I feel so lucky to get to work with such talented people every day. And that's probably the biggest part that I love about what I do, is just like getting to be inspired every day.
That's awesome. What's next for you guys in both the sort of retail or like commerce space? You know, philosophically, like what's next for Sam? What's next for Mayfair Group?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good question. I'm really big on, something that I've been really working on is like, you know, Mayfair has been a really big part of who I am, but I have so many other things that I want to bring to the world in terms of just creative projects, storytelling, like books. Like there's so much, you know, storytelling and creating kind of campaigns and things that are like rooted in this helping people feel seen. Like I truly feel like that's part of my life work. So, you know, there'll be a lot more coming from me in terms of creative projects, advocacy. Like I really want to do a lot more in that space individually. So I'm also writing a book, but it's going to be on my terms and not be something that I rush and something that I just put out when I feel like it's ready. But for Mayfair, we are now in Nordstrom, which is so nuts. Like we're in top 30 doors. So you can probably find Mayfair at Nordstrom. We also sell on Revolve and quite a few other retailers. And then we just launched actually a big collaboration with Dynamite, which is a really, really big Canadian retailer, and they do have US stores too. And so for the first time, like, Mayfair is available in Canada, which is amazing. So we're working on a lot of expanding distribution. And then we have some insane new categories coming this year. I can't really say too much, but it's been a category that's been asked for so long for us. And we're going to be creating additional kind of like products for this specific category. So a lot is coming this year. Really cool collaborations we have in the works too. So some really exciting things.
I love it. And Sam, before we wrap up here, because you have been open about your own journey, your mental health journey, what are some practices, some routines, or some rituals that keep you grounded? If you could share with us, and this might work for other people if they want to try too.
Yeah. I mean, every kind of person is different. This is just specifically what works for me. Something that's really big is I've had to find work on creativity outside of work, because I was a creative person, an entrepreneur, and then I started my business and my creative outlet became my job. And so I've really had to prioritize creativity outside of work. So like me writing, I'm obsessed with inner child healing. I do so much shadow work. It's been, we could talk about this for a whole other podcast. Like,
oh my God. Inner child work is like my Roman Empire right now. Oh. We just did like a women's circle. Like my friends and I do this kind of stuff. And like, it was all centered around inner child work. And it's so healing. It is so healing.
So I'm really, really big about like my shadows and finding time to like create joy. So I will like go to museums by myself and have dates with my inner child. I'll go paint pottery. I'm like really big about just like, to me, it combats adult seriousness just to like have playtime, and it also enhances my creativity. So I'm really big about that. That's a really big part of my routine. And then something I put intention into this year is I'm calling it movement for joy, not obligation. So a lot of times we feel this need to like work out because we want to lose weight or we want to, and for me, it's like, no, I want movement to come from a place of joy. So I've been really intentional about like, today I want to go on a hike. Today I want to go play tennis, like just finding ways to move, but that ways that bring me joy and don't feel like an obligation. And then, you know, whatever it is, if it's your meditation, your hot girl walk, your bath time, whatever helps you transition out from your work hours to your you hours. I think that's a really big part of like me feeling balanced, is having a transition like before my work day and after my work day, where I like, you know, go on a walk, journal, meditate, whatever it is, but just like having a transition so that you're not just going from one thing straight into the next. And then, yeah, I do like I call it 5-5-5. I do 5 minutes of breath work, in the morning, or meditation, 5 minutes of journaling, and 5 minutes of movement. And it's my like morning and kind of like night routine, just to like get myself situated in the morning before I touch my tech, before I do anything. I like really am big about starting my day from an intentional basis, but you know, all those things ebbs and flow, but those are some of the things that I really love that help me like stay balanced.
I love it. Sam, thank you so much for sharing your story, being a little vulnerable with us today, and sharing what's ahead for Mayfair Group. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I seriously so appreciate it. And I love this space and being a part of it. So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this latest episode of We Gotta Talk. If you don't mind, I would love if you could leave a rating and review. Those help this show to get out to people who might find it useful or entertaining. I'm so grateful for your support. Please follow on Instagram at Sunny Abada, or check out our latest blog post at wegottatalk.com/blog. See you next time.